Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're talking about Season 7, Episode 6, titled, This is the One That Makes You Swear Off of Walking Dead for Good, Right?
Yeah, this is the one that just makes you swear and throw controllers and at your TV. I mean, one of the worst episodes in modern Walking Dead history.
Easily.
I mean, when
easily.
I think historically bad episodes, I think of Vatos. I think of... That actually might be called Tell It to the Frogs. I'm not really sure. I think of the
There was season... one called Vatos.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good. I think of the Season 3 finale.
Mm-hmm.
Although that was terrible mostly because of the implication for next season, the fact that they're going to continue to draw out a storyline beyond its point of viability. Uh-huh. This is just bad in construction. It was bad in acting.
In execution. It's terrible.
Yeah.
I hated this episode top to the bottom. In the middle of the live watch, I realized I'm not even having fun cracking jokes on this thing. It's
right.
So bad.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to keep it brief. I mean, I had fun cracking jokes on it. I'm not gonna lie.
There were a couple of good ones.
Halfway through, I was like, okay, this is what this is. I'm just going to go for it. But, yeah. You know, I don't know, man. Like, and increasingly, I have been saying that I don't understand why the writers don't have the chops to pull off a multi-threaded storyline. And now I think this is increasingly yet another budget screw. Because
why do you say that?
You can cut down on, you know, paying people and appearances and keep their episodes counts low and manage this big cast. Like, this is a perfectly fine storyline, and there was a couple of important takeaways, which I'm sure will be, you know, important later on.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a lot easier to take if it was over the course of 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. You know, you got 5 or 10 minutes of it at a time in an episode if it's the B or C plot, but.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you only had one, I guess, two main cast members in this, and they're like the guest stars, and you're keeping Andrew Lincoln and all the other guys off the payroll, I don't know if that's true. This is a Walking Dead conspiracy theory.
Right.
But I don't know, man. It wasn't good.
Well, I can tell you that they are... So, okay, in some ways, what I'm about to say, this idea is admirable. In other ways, it's a real shitty way to run the most popular show on television.
Right.
They have hired, yet again, directors and writers who don't know what the fuck they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who directed this episode mm-hmm. has only ever directed Walking Dead episodes.
Mm-hmm.
7 of them, I think.
Okay. So he's got some experience, at least at this point.
Would you call that experience? I mean...
I don't know what his other episodes
his
are, but
other
yeah,
episodes
no,
aren't
sure.
terrible. They're not sure. on this level, but this one, he just, I don't know, he fell on his face. I didn't like the directing. I thought it was terrible.
There's a lot of things where, like some of the reaction shots, like Heath shooting one thing, and like literally the actor had no idea what to do and
yeah.
how to emote what was supposed to happen, and you should have been like, cut, okay. I like what you did here, but we need to figure out something so this is an awkward transition. I almost think that like it probably was a really shit show and maybe was partially saved in editing because there
maybe.
Was a couple of shots and everyone that wasn't Heath and Tara was mm-hmm. so far below replacement value acting chops and ability
uh-huh.
in my opinion.
Right.
But there again, it's hard to suss out what is the writing, what's the direction, and what's
yeah.
the acting. I don't want to fucking bag on these actors. You know, they're getting the chance of a lifetime, and I'm sure we're going to see more of them later, but damn.
Well, I mean, ultimately, you know, the director is has the weight of the responsibility
yeah.
of that final.
He's the guy looking at the
that
the,
final
what he's getting.
Thing.
He's the guy looking at what he's getting and saying this is good enough.
Right.
Or we
and
need...
when you promote a camera operator slash electrical guy,
uh-huh.
to director and
right.
just let him loose, I feel like you get what you get, and
yeah.
this is what we got. And I
Did
like
we throw a fit?
I don't want to say I don't want to call that guy just terrible human being. Like he's
right.
he's learning, he's trying to figure it out.
Right.
But maybe this is not the show to figure
sure.
it out on. When you are making billions of dollars and you have 17 million people a week tuning in, maybe don't run the camera guy up to director and say, here you go.
Especially now that they have a minor league team, Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Franchise that shit, man.
Yeah, man, I don't know. And the thing is just conceptually, the whole all-woman, all-woman, female
It's like, tropey. It's just
like we were making jokes. Like this is essentially a Star Trek: The Next Generation episode. Riker visits the planet that's ran by the females,
right?
And
they want to kill him, or they can't tolerate that he's talking, or
the zombie fake out with Heath.
Uh huh.
Like it's so ridiculous to have a character as distinguished as him. You know, both by the fact that he's black, the fact that he's got a very distinctive hairstyle, the fact that every other fucking zombie on that bridge is covered in sand, and this fresh as a daisy zombie woman who has Heath's hairstyle happens to be like, I mean, come on, man, this is, and they're just doing this more and more. This fake out, this baity shit, for what purpose?
I don't know. For they think it's going to be fun.
Right. And they're layering in like a lot of stuff like you know, Tara's got this mysterious tattoo that everybody's talking about. And what the hell does the card PPP mean? I mean, do I care? None of this stuff seems like it has any relevance before this episode.
Yeah, and you can't just engage me with introducing clues to a mystery.
Right.
If nothing else about the episode is satisfactory, even. If it's below the average Walking Dead episode, which is not that high a bar to hit.
Right. If your Rubik's Cube is covered in razor blades and rusty nails, I'm not going to pick it up and start twisting it, man.
No way.
Yeah, I was really.
And that's not even the worst thing they did with Heath, is have this fake out.
Well,
like, yet again, they're going to the well of, we can't be mean to people. We have to survive somehow. We can be mean. We need to be mean. Yeah. It's the only way you survive. This bullshit is played out.
Yeah, and I don't care if it's seasons ago.
Yes, I don't care if it's a new character who's just now coming to grips with it. I don't want to see it.
It's perfectly natural for an Alexandrian to be having these reactions, but Jesus Christ, we've seen,
as an audience don't need to see it.
This isn't even the
times.
First Alexandrian we've seen have this conversation.
It's not.
So
every single one is going to have.
And then finally, the other fatal flaw of this episode is the setup from the last episode. Carl and Jesus sneaking into the Savior's compound is exciting as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I was genuinely pumped, and then they drop me with Tara washing up on a fucking beach. Get the fuck out of here with this shit. Get out. No, I'm pretty low. I'm gonna try to get through this without repeating myself as much as possible and try to make as funny a podcast as possible. And then surely to Christ, next week with only two episodes left to go.
Yeah.
We'll get into what's going on with the Savior's Complex. Or maybe that would be a cliffhanger for next season.
Maybe.
God, that'd be the worst, wouldn't it? Because the other thing is, like, when we were walking out of the studio last night after live watch, I'm like, well, at least they collapsed, you know, the gang's back together. Like, this is one less split off from the group that we have to track. And you're like, no, Heath is still in the wind.
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck, you're right.
Heath is still out there somewhere. Dropping key cards and doing lawn jobs.
Sure. And, you know, that's the other thing. People are, like, speculating, what could it be? Is it a reference to point-to-point protocol? Is it? No, it's not.
Point-to-point protocol? Are they setting the internet back up?
Dude, I know.
Well, actually, PPP would... That wouldn't be so much of an internet.
Right.
It
would be a point-to-point connection. Anyway, fuck it. Should we get to the recap?
Yeah, please.
We start the episode on Tara washing ashore. There's some women off screen talking about rehabilitating teddy bears and killing waterlogged zombies. And there's a little girl who's very proud to be dispatching them with one shot.
Yeah.
With a little homemade spear.
Good for you.
This girl finds another bobber. They're calling the regional flavor for zombies here is bobber.
Yep.
But it's not a bobber. It's Tara. And they have a debate about whether they should or not. The little girl's all about it. Not only should she wants to.
I can't. Like, this is where I get on the writers. This is on you, you fucking writers.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a chunk of actual dialogue from this show. Words that were spoken on the screen.
Yeah, I know where you're going with
this.
Here
it is. We still got to do it. We don't have to do it. Yes, we do. No, we don't. We're supposed to. I want to. I don't, so we won't. Are you going to tell me? Are you going to tell? Just tell me if you're going to tell. I'm not a snitch, but I'm not going to help. This is Judy Blume, Tales of a Fourth Grade bullshit.
And I get it. They're kids talking. There's like an older
one
teenager.
Of them is not. Eh. One of them is old enough to know better than to speak these words.
Right. No. But again, I get it. It's kids. But that's why writing for kids and directing with kids and all that stuff is so challenging, because it's very hard to make it seem natural. It's terrible. I mean, go.
I hate it every second.
Somebody needs to lock the writer and director in the room and make them watch Stranger Things 20 times.
Yes.
That's how kids talk.
Thank you.
That's how kids in well-written dramas talk.
Right.
I should say. Anyway. Yeah, and after that, she says, fuck this teddy bear. Then Cindy, who we understand is the older woman and the only one that I kind of bothered learning the name of, drags Tara up the beach, no doubt embedding at least 500 pounds of sand up her ass crack. You don't, if you ever have to drag my ass on the beach and I'm wearing jeans or any kind of thing with a waistband, drag me by the feet.
Yeah,
don't use my waistband as a ram scoop for every particle of sand on the goddamn beach.
And you know there's sticks and rocks and it's not even
crabs.
Just sand. Yeah, crabs for sure. Fish bones.
Yo, fish bones. I didn't even think
and
of that.
Guts.
Not good. Jellyfish.
Yep.
So she drags her above the waterline, which was nice. And then we flash. But and this is the other thing. Speaking of played out, Walking Dead flash forwarding on the cold open.
Yeah.
Stop it. Really, stop it.
Wait, are they flash forwarding or are they flash backing when they do the Heath and Tara stuff?
I mean,
I'm actually not sure. It's equal parts.
That's true. So Heath and Tara have been out for 2 weeks and they've gone further than they should. And Heath's got a really dour view of this scavenging shit because apparently in 2 weeks of scavenging, they found 8 cans of okra and a bottle of aspirin.
Rusty cans.
I find that personally very hard to believe that you've been driving around for 2 weeks and that's all. I mean, that is the definition. Like, you've eaten more food than you found.
Yep.
This is the kind of shit that got on my nerve with Battlestar Galactica. It's like the writer's like, oh, we want to make sure people know they're desperate. I know. Let's have these fighter pilots been up for 1 million hours on nonstop sorties because that's real desperation. No, that's insane beyond any kind of human limits and endurance, and like, keep it reasonable, man. Like this whole conversation would have a whole different tone if Heath has been like, you realize we've eaten at least 10 times more than we found,
yeah,
for a bottle of aspirin. This is like, we burnt gas, and it's just
the opposite of fruitful. And there's also the idea that they said they were coming back in 2 weeks,
right?
And the town is depending on that, and they, right, like, they are not expecting them to necessarily find anything,
right?
But they are expecting them to come back, and they, sure, could be counting on that in ways that they don't know because they've been out of the loop for 2 weeks. You need, yeah, to go back.
Like, what if Rick is planning on, like, the, you know, like, hey, at least half of the shipment for the next Saviors thing is going to come, like, you know, it's going to come in, and like, if you come in with 8 cans of okra and a bottle of aspirin, the other thing is like, this society is not sustainable, like the scavenge-based society. It's all,
right,
apparently it's played out. You can ride, yeah, around an RV for 2 fucking weeks and find nothing,
yep,
on the east fucking coast.
Yeah, like Alexandrians.
Like gas, yes. All the gas
in
the world is gone.
Sure.
Okay, you got shitty diesel and vegetable, but like that's a thing. But like the fact you can't find canned foods or medicine or ammo in, mm-hmm, America 2 years after an apocalypse, If that's the storyline, then this Savior thing is not going to work. You know, you just can't scavenge that much. Is that what you're,
well,
trying to tell us?
Well, I think with the Saviors, they're trying to just subjugate towns or communities that will actually produce for them, not,
right,
necessarily scavenge, but like actually produce, farm the earth, make things.
So they're going away from a scavenge base to an actual agarian society.
Yeah,
or
at some
like
point
that.
There's got to be a transition, and I,
yeah,
think
you're,
they're,
right,
doing that all right. It's just, yeah, the time has come to stop the scavenging runs.
I'm just,
right,
saying, like, if two adults spent 2 weeks out in the field and all they had is,
yeah,
8 cans of okra and a bottle of aspirin, I'd have kicked their ass. It's like, you should have come back day 3 of finding nothing.
Right.
And come up with a different plan, because this is just, you wasted so much shit, mm-hmm, completely unaccounted for. Anyway.
It's true.
The other thing is, how far away is this Oceanside place? Because
from,
it's like a 2 week drive, but an 8 hour walk or a couple days walk. How long was Tara walking back?
Probably a long time, I imagine.
So how far into the future have we gone?
At least overnight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it just, the geography of this place seems fucked.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely didn't like drive in a straight line away from Alexandria. So
sure, but 2 weeks of driving anywhere,
you'd
is
be pretty
like,
far away.
Yeah, yeah. This thing just seemed like, well, ill thought out. Anyway, Heath has a big fit because he's thinking, why do I care about people back at home relying on me when we killed a bunch of people that needed to be killed? And this is just I'm not even gonna talk about it.
No,
we've
talked about it 100 times.
Yep, and there'll be at least 2 more conversations like this before the episode's over.
Yep.
We see Tara's tattoo. Do you want to talk about that a bit? It's the Roman numerals 26, 13, 22, and 9. And I have no clue. And there's also at least one more line of it. And I have no idea what it means. There's been people thinking it means something in Proverbs about feeding people and lions in the road, which, fine, I guess that could fit Negan and the look scavenging for food, but I don't know why you put a tattoo on a character's arm for that kind of
symbolism.
It's got
to be something more important to her.
Yeah, I don't know. It also could mean, what is 26? So that'd be Z3. Some, I don't know. Like, you could respond to some letters as like Ziog or something, but what the hell does that mean?
Oh, wait, you don't know what Ziog is?
Ziog? Sure. Yeah. Isn't that a god they worshipped in that one Sean Connery movie where he wore
Zardoz?
Where he wore bikini briefs and thigh high boots.
Yeah, it is. Ziog.
Okay.
Zardoz and Ziog.
She's just a big Ziog fan.
Oh, yeah.
Cindy comes back and checks on her and gives her water and a bag of supplies with a spear.
Wait, wait, wait. Oh, okay, yeah. She's still on the beach.
Yep.
Not at the compound yet.
Tara's faking being asleep. She wakes up, takes a swig of water, unwraps disgusting fish that Cindy left her, and thus enraged, springs into action to follow her back to her camp.
Yep.
Where she finds this creepy kind of swamp camp, which I come to understand is some kind of RV or camping community. Oceanside Motor Park or something.
Oh, right.
Right. And she overhears women talking about their equally fruitless scavenging trips. There's children playing. We slowly realize it's an all-female camp. They're well-organized, ludicrously well-armed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have so many fucking guns and ammo for people that left their community with nothing but the shirts on their back. Like, these women have found a fucking National Guard armory or something.
Right.
One of the two important takeaways, I'm sure. These women, super well-armed.
I mean, especially when Rosita's asking about it at the end of the episode.
Right.
Yeah, let's point to it maybe a little more.
Beg the plot a little harder.
Right.
So Tara discovers they're being well-armed when they open fire on her. It must be said these women are terrible shots.
Yeah, all of this, they are horrible
shots. I haven't seen this bad a shooting since the fucking Terminus folks, and that was a ploy. That was a deliberate herding of people into...
Right.
I mean, they were intentionally missing the shots. This was just terrible.
Yeah. Michonne. Michonne was a pretty bad shot.
Michonne's a pretty bad shot, but she's a sword girl.
But that's the thing.
She's not a ranged attacker. She's melee only.
Right, and these people are not fighters. I mean, all of their fighters were massacred by Negan, so, you know, I will grant them maybe they're bad shots.
Okay.
But what I can't abide is this. Normally, I would like this, but in an episode so shitty, it really stands out as maybe you don't want to point to the shittiness of it by essentially creating a 70s torture porn cannibal movie here. Like this, to the extent that they did a pull zoom.
Uh-huh.
You know what that is? Uh-huh. You remember the shot in this episode where Tara's looking through the trees and it zooms out from her face
so
and it shows
her face is sitting there?
That is a shot I haven't seen since 1988. And directors have been fired in the interim for trying it. And this show did it and it was terrible.
That's how they did. That's also the Negan reveal when he's like, Jesus Christ, look at this place. And they zoom out like it's an Austin. Like I'd say it's an Austin Powers.
Yes. Okay. So that's a thing now that they do apparently.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Anyway,
how did she get spotted?
I don't know. They do not make that clear.
Right, which is on the director, and that's one of the many reasons. Like, he doesn't connect the story pieces well enough.
Very muddy action. Where is she running? Where is she going? What's the layout of the town? Nothing spatially grounded at all.
I rewound, like, 5 times trying to figure out how she got spotted.
No, she.
And
I mean,
couldn't.
Yeah, they just have a sixth sense, I guess, for fist bumps in the area.
Yeah.
So there's a shotgun-wielding woman that Tara disarms and butts in the face rather than killing her. The little teddy bear rejector takes her at gunpoint, then Cindy saves her for a second time.
Mm-hmm.
We go flashback to the past, or flash forward.
Well, they all stand around menacingly. Maybe.
Why isn't she just cut down? I mean, I guess because Cindy jumped in there.
Right. So what's her name, Rachel, the little girl?
The teddy bear rejector is what I call her.
I think her name's Rachel. So, yeah, she should have definitely killed her instead of saying, I got to do it. She was pretty gung-ho early on.
Yeah, I don't know. My interactions with 10-year-olds, they're a bunch of fucking impulse control junkies. Like, if they're just if you said it's okay to kill a person and they wanted to kill a person, then the very first chance they get to kill a person, they're going to take it.
Yep.
They're going to take it.
And maybe they don't fire. My theory is that they don't fire because they realize that they're in a terrible firing position and that the crossfire would likely kill right. at least half of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe don't stand around a circle if you want to hold somebody at gunpoint.
Yeah. Anyway. So Heath and Tara come to some kind of fucking mess on a bridge. Now, I do think a bridge is actually a pretty dope idea for a hideout in a post-zombie apocalypse until the people start becoming a threat. Because you can't avoid the fact that you're on some sort of crossroads, literally. Mm-hmm. You're on a road that crosses something that people need to drive on.
True.
But for zombie defense and like lines of sight, it's a pretty good idea. However, this is one of the very many zombie set pieces that makes no fucking sense at all.
Let's try and figure out what it is.
Here, first of all, why are dump trucks backed up ass to ass dumping a pile of sand that is somehow twice the height of the trucks themselves?
Does that make sense if you have two trucks?
No. Did the sand slam together into some kind of wave and form a mountain?
Depends on how much momentum it has.
Do you guys not know how piles of sand work?
Yeah, they spread out.
if you dump a pile of sand out of a wheelbarrow, the resulting pile is not twice as high as the fucking wheelbarrow. Okay? It just is not.
Yep.
So
what is the thing? So were the zombies already on the bridge and they dumped the sand on top of them to cover them?
I don't know.
As a preventative measure or as a last resort. Zombies in the sand already in the trucks and this is a weapon? Or this is a booby trap for later? Like they took over the bridge and then they said, fuck this bridge and put a bunch of zombies in the sand on it?
I don't know. Heath's saying they were in the middle of some project, but I mean, I don't know what that project could possibly be, because you're right. Like, the fact, I can't think of a scenario where there'd be that many zombies trapped in the sand.
Maybe they were turning it into a beach. They missed the beach so much that they're like, this bridge needs to be sandy.
But how did the zombies? And later on, when the tarp falls down, there was like 100 zombies in that pile of sand.
Yeah.
It's so stupid. It is so stupid. I don't understand it. Also, like, if they dump the sand to try to kill the zombies, Heath discovers like a pile of spent shells.
Yeah.
Like, did you literally shoot the zombies 1,000 times, decide it wasn't working, and then decide to back up the trucks and dump sand on them?
Maybe they weren't zombies at first. Maybe they gunned them down, not shooting them in the heads, and then dumped sand on their bodies as a booby trap? Or as a warning to would-be
I think it was a ritual bridge sacrifice. Campers. You know, the only thing that makes sense is if these people pissed off the saviors and the saviors forced them into a huddle.
Right.
And then dumped...
Gunned them all down.
And then dumped sand on them. Yeah. Okay, that does kind of make sense, except for the twice-as-height sand pile.
Oh, right. Physics be damned on this show.
Yeah. Anyway, Tara finds a big bag stuck in the sand, and she starts pulling it as Heath discovers the shit ton of empty bullet casings, and the whole improbably stacked pile of sand comes sliding down on them, lightly covering their legs.
Yeah.
And then they pretend to struggle for a good 45 seconds.
While the director yells, struggle!
Yes!
Struggle!
Yeah. And Tara, I mean, the sandwalkers are pretty dope. They all looked really cool and skeletal and desiccated and like, you know, mummified zombies.
And I like how they come apart, too. Like,
yeah.
You stab one of those things, and they're a little gooey on the inside, but the outside just comes right off.
Like a dried coconut husk.
Yep.
It's just a really silly conceit. And Tara gets overrun, and Heath is like, I'm out, and he runs away.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense because the next time we see them, but whatever.
Tara drops the gun with the Negan carving in it, the bat, Lucille.
Mm.
Do you think there's any chance they find this and realize that there are more Alexandrians out there?
Probably.
Because the only place those guns would come from is that raid on the satellite.
Right. And it's going to, you know, I mean, bad things are going to happen to Oceanside.
Yeah, I would think so.
I'm not exactly sure how it's going to happen, but yeah, I mean, it seems like what they want us to think is that somehow Oceanside is going to be brought into the fold.
Oh, at Alexandria?
Yeah.
Like that fold?
I mean, that's what they're trying to set up, although Tara would have to break her promise, which she seems improbably likely to keep. I don't know.
So far, yeah.
So the leader of the group comes in. Her name's Tanya, and she's got Shotgun and some other woman flanking her. And she asks if Tara needs to use the bathroom before they get started.
Which, it takes like 3 minutes, so right. No, they I'm
got
good.
They got her chained to a radiator, locked in a cabin, and there's bells twinkling, and they explain they have 6 of them plus an air horn, and is designed to bamboozle zombies somehow?
I didn't understand any of this, and Tara seems to get it immediately.
I know, and she's like, oh, clever. I'm like, yeah. Why do you have a bell in the town if they're designed to distract zombies?
Is there... Is and the also, air Tara horn says, like
what
something...
about the air horn? Did we ever actually hear the air horn go off?
I didn't hear an air horn, but is it possible that like the air horn was at the compound that the saviors were at the satellite location? And
well, why would Tara make that connection at this point?
I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well, I'm not going to spend any more time thinking about
this.
Yeah,
I couldn't figure it out either. Sorry.
They hand wave it away by the fact that the dead are drawn the bells, and we're lucky this area is fairly clear because barges and evacuations and shit. Tara lies.
Maybe the air horn is part of the evacuation.
Maybe. Maybe.
They're firing off air horns to tell people to get out 2 years after the apocalypse starts.
Sure. Yeah, they're the last vanguard of the evacuation staff.
Yeah.
Tara lies about her past and friend, because that's what you do, and she's quickly found out by claiming that her fishing boat is a larder. That's weird that you test someone's knowledge of fishing boats by giving a multiple-choice question and only one of the choices are incorrect.
Right.
Like, 66% of the time she could have picked either trawler or was it the other, a sienner, which
something
I think
like
is essentially a boat that pulls a big net. And she could have had a 66% chance of, you know, succeeding the knowledge check.
Maybe this is like the first in a long series of multiple choice, like 55
sure,
multiple
yeah,
choice
she
questions.
Just failed the first one.
Yeah.
Or maybe this is just a D&D campaign that Eugene is, you know, he's game mastering.
None of this is actually happening.
Yeah, she just did a fishing check and just rolled a natural one on it. I don't know. anyway, she explains how she served aboard a fishing boat larder, got separated from her. And that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to make up a lie, why not make up a lie? Like, she wanted to be a cop. She was like a cop trainee, right? She was she flunked out of the academy or something because
right.
She couldn't shoot in the head or something. I don't know what her exact backstory was, but like, why wouldn't she say she's a beat cop from Atlanta? Cause she could make all kinds of details up about Atlanta and about police procedure and probably be pretty correct.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why jump to fishermen when you're from Atlanta? What kind of fishing goes on in fucking Atlanta?
Right.
This just doesn't make any goddamn sense, man.
Or how about something so obscure that no one would possibly have any information about it? Like,
I own a snowmobile dealership in Atlanta.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, really? How are sales? Terrible.
Yeah,
they're
terrible.
Awful.
We sell one a year, and it's from some guy driving from Minnesota to get a deal.
Yep.
Anyway, she gets knocked off a bridge and explains that the current drug her to the beach, which I'd have to see how this water system all works.
Well, she fought the current, is what she says.
Oh, she fought the current
yeah.
and exhausted her, and she managed not to drown?
Yeah, and ended up in Chesapeake Bay or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway... Tanya says, unfortunately, we can't let you go because you know too much. We actually usually shoot strangers on site, but since you spared the shotgun woman and my granddaughter is crazy for you, what are we going to do?
Right.
I don't know. I'm on
so
pin,
I'm letting
I'm
her have her way,
needles.
Even though everyone in this camp firmly disagrees, and it would erode the very foundation of our existence at this point, but I'm going to let it slide this time and do what my granddaughter wants, just because.
If we come back
what
to Oceanside and Cindy has not been executed for being a traitor,
yeah.
then what the fuck?
I don't understand it. Like, if you're so gung-ho about this philosophy...
I get it's your granddaughter, but here's the thing. Like, if you don't enforce justice, you would be deposed, and then they'd both put you up against the wall. Like,
right.
if this town is this traumatized and this paranoid about strangers and xenophobic, that's exactly what would happen.
Sure.
I don't know. Fuck it. Whatever. So they invite her over to dinner for, like, fish stew or something. They have a conversation about Cindy's mom and the little girl and doing it for the first time, and I don't give a shit about any of that stuff. how hard it is to be a good shot and a pacifist in this world, because you just don't know what it's like, Jim. You don't know what it's like to be able to pull the trigger.
It's been a while since I've heard that one, but yeah.
And then the beach women make a play to recruit Tara. They explain they had to run in, but they have to explain about how hardcore they are because they had to run into another group. And they killed all of her men, and after that, they left their old homes with just a clothes on their back and a fucking armory, and they vowed to stay hidden and kill anyone that found them.
Yeah, so let me throw one niblet of praise here to The Walking Dead. And I think it's barely earned, just barely.
Yeah.
But they did twist up the trope of, you know, this compound of women by not making it all, you know, the choice of the women, right?
Sure.
Like, they hate men, and they don't want any in their comp. No, it was just, well, all their fighters were dudes, and Negan came through and killed them all.
Right.
That makes fine sense.
Based
and
on
it's
the makeup
a good twist
of our
up.
Group, that seems pretty regressive and sexist, but whatever.
Right, right. Sure, but, you know, Negan is those things
Negan,
in
and
a
yeah,
lot of ways.
Yeah, this, you know, Negan does have that quote-unquote benevolent sexism. I'd almost buy the fact that he would leave a whole shit ton of women in a village armed to the teeth because of that same kind of sexism he's got going on.
Right. But, I do think they found the guns afterward, but that's just a tiny bit of praise. And I do, you know, they've done a lot with Tara in recent years as of the last, like, year or two, maybe.
Right.
Specifically last season, to make her more likable, to make her more interesting to us. I thought the whole relationship with Denise was awesome.
Yeah.
And her personality does still shine through even in shitty episodes like this.
Sure.
There are a couple of moments in this where she gave me a slight chuckle.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of them. You know, I'd never thought I'd be asking this, but where are all the men?
Uh-huh.
That's pretty good.
Sure.
That's a pretty good line. And then she also has, like, the line when she's standing in the circle of guns going, or we can just do this. We can keep doing this. No, not a problem.
Yeah.
Just a couple of ones that give me a small chuckle, but the rest of this, it's painful.
Well, she goes back to the larder boat joke. That's where it's like, yeah, like some of the other stuff is kind of cute and chuckle-worthy, but that was pretty dumb. So she says, hey, you know, Tanya says, so we've talked about us. Now you got to come clean about your lying, that you're not on a boat. What's your real deal? And she goes, hey, we actually have this place called Alexandria, and it's pretty sweet. And we found this satellite outpost, and we totally murdered a whole bunch of people. So we totally get where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of significant glances being shared amongst the beach women about this satellite outpost, but Tanya says that we can send some scouts out to their community and escort you and help you find your friend and then see where things go from there. But Cindy can't go because she wouldn't be down with murdering you.
This I don't understand.
Okay. Why?
They've clearly... Well, I think it's clear. So in the next scene where she goes up, she notices, hey, there's a knife behind me, and she walks up to that zombie and then tries to run.
Uh-huh.
I can't tell if they shoot her because she tries to run or because this is all the plan from the beginning. I think it's the plan from the beginning.
But they don't do a great job. And I don't know how you do that because I also could see The Walking Dead making this crystal clear and everyone's mugging for the camera, you know, and, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, take her to escort her friend, you know.
That's the whole thing. They don't need to do this. They're in a community full of people who have no problem killing on sight anybody.
But they
who
don't
comes
wanna,
up
they
to
don't
their
wanna
community.
They don't want to upset Cindy. She wants
who
to maintain.
Who cares?
This grandma
Cindy is
does,
the anomaly.
Clearly.
Everyone else should be like, why are we humoring Cindy?
Agreed. I don't know why Tanya is in charge. She seems like a pretty wishy-washy.
I believe it's Natanya.
Natanya?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Because you're right. Like, this community of traumatized people would be like, what the fuck? We shoot on site, no exceptions.
I mean, unless this is a top-down philosophy that the group doesn't go along with, but the kid, like, Rachel certainly does.
Yeah, she's in, and all the others seem like the shotgunner seems like it's totally something that should happen, and I don't know. But we'll get, there's a lot more inconsistencies with this as we go. At outside, as they're about to escort her to Heath or to help her find Heath, she's making this pitch about people getting together and this is how the world is going to be again. And I think at this point we find out this place is called Oceanside because we see the sign at the for the park entrance. Tara goes in for a fist bump with Tanya, and Tanya says, paper covers rock, bitch, and kind of goes for an awkward shake.
She sure does. If she had put out scissors, she would have got to leave, no
problem.
What
are you going to do? What are you going to do? Teddy Bear Girl spits at Tara's feet, and Tara flips her to Bird.
Pretty
says,
awesome.
Peace among worlds.
Like the attitude, Tara.
We walk past a big-ass bell, which I still don't understand what they're for. Tara slowly realizes they're not going to escort her back to Alexandria when a shotgun pulls... I think it's shotgun. Maybe it's the other one. That pulls a knife and looks like... At Tara, like, oh, how do I stick this thing into you?
Yeah, staring her down.
Not exactly sure how this is going to go down, but it's going to be bad for you. And Tara says, I'll do it. And kind of hilariously, awkwardly. And then she runs. And these girls follow with the guns. And Tara running through the woods is high comedy.
Is it?
Because her boobs are going everywhere.
I almost feel bad for her trying to run.
And I'm not saying, I don't want to make this about like, oh, like how big her boobs are. I'm just saying if I'm running from you and there's a third party disinterested observer saying, I wonder who's going to win this race. I think 99% of people would bet you because you're the thinner, lither, quicker looking one. And I'm this big lumbering thing.
Right.
Like she is being chased by what looks like, I mean, they could be marathoners for all I know.
Sure.
Just saying I'm going to bet on the more horsepower per pound.
Yeah.
It's just hilarious. And then I also like the fact that when she finally gets a chance to stop, she sucks wind for like 5 minutes straight.
Yeah.
So that was pretty funny. Anyway, Tara slips and slides down a hill. She ambushes the shotgunner again. She needs to be fired from her job, man. Mm-hmm. They briefly struggle for a gun and a knife. Shotgun finally gets her, ironically, at rifle point. Tara begins to beg for her life, and Shotgun explains about the saviors and how they are so fucked at Alexandria, which is frustrating because we know all this.
Yeah.
This is old news. Tara is just getting with the times, which is essentially the last final act of this episode. They reveal that they killed every man and boy over 10, very Genghis Khan of them. Cindy comes out flying out of the woods and waylays Shotgun Woman and tells Tara to get lost. This is ridiculous. Because every scene that they show before and after this, they very clearly have everyone crunch, crunch, crunching through the forest. Uh-huh. Like you should in autumn. But Cindy's able to stealth attack.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know they do this all the time, but this is especially egregious that essentially Cindy comes flying in, body tackling the saver three times in a single episode.
And were you sent out here to kill this person or not?
Right.
This is why I question whether or not they were, because she doesn't just pull the trigger here. She delivers this long soliloquy about...
I understand that it's hard, and that's one of the plot points, is that it's very hard to kill people, like, you know, if you don't have to. But on the other hand... This is 2.5-3 years into zombie apocalypse. Everyone's had to kill somebody. And didn't we say 2 seasons ago after we got through Alexandria that this is the last society that we're going to accept that has got this kind of fucking country bumpkin view of the sanctity of life?
Right.
Like, no more. You can't find another fucking community that has a problem killing or they've been wiped out. We found yet another community that has a problem with killing.
And they make it a point to say... Everybody's killed people here.
I know.
Like, this is not something new to them. They're not struggling with the first time killing someone.
Yeah.
They've done it before. Just kill her and be done with it. Go back to your community.
Yeah.
The longer you stay out here, the more chance of you getting found. So go back.
So Cindy, at this point, bothers to hold Tara at gunpoint. And even Tara in-universe is like, get the fuck out of here. You've saved me now for, like, the fourth time. There's no way you're pulling the trigger.
Right.
And Cindy ludicrously demands that she swear on, I guess, pain of death to not reveal the secrets of the Wu-Tang Clan. What the hell? What the hell, man? I get that she's only 16 years old and doesn't know how the world works, but what the hell?
The writers gave up at this point.
If Tara is evil,
she
says, I promise, and I come back with an army and kill you.
Yeah.
If she's not evil, I don't understand why you would have this kind of dilemma, swear.
Yeah, I mean, what are the other options here? Kill her.
Yeah. Which she's not going to do.
Right.
She's
it's clear that she's not going to do that.
The only way she might kill is if Tara says, I'm evil, I'm totally evil, and I'm coming back with an army. Only way she gets shot in this scenario.
Do you think in this moment, if she doesn't swear, does she get shot?
No, I don't know. I don't think so, no.
I don't think so either. Yeah, it feels like a bluff to me.
Yeah. So anyway, they have this long talk about, you know, Tara's like, why would I come back? And she's like, why would anyone do anything? Well, you all think you have to, but you don't. And nobody's evil. They just decide to forget who they were. And this is the problem with absolute pacifism, right? It always loses to anyone that's willing to fight for whatever viewpoint.
This is the struggle that Morgan has had for a while now. And he has come to the conclusion of, yeah, maybe I was wrong about that.
Uh-huh. And I get it that it's a 16-year-old girl. This could be a perfectly realistic character. It's just this is like the eighth person like this I've seen in 7 seasons. And stop it. Yeah. Stop it. This is not interesting anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. I don't understand as they're sitting at the typewriters writing it, how they don't themselves we can't go back to the you don't know what it's like out there anymore. Well, you can't.
It's not even that well. It's Shane and Rick season 1 well, man.
Yeah.
This has been going on literally since day 2.
This is an old, dry, pumped out, zombie infested well that they just need to not go back to.
And sometimes they're able to smooth it over with a decent episode, with a decent structure, right?
Yep.
This time it's so glaringly obvious because there's nothing else to cover.
Asking Tara, a C grade character at best, that only became interesting because we kind of sort of like Denise,
right,
to carry an entire episode with no other main cast except for Heath himself, a C-grade actor.
Yep.
Not actor, sorry.
Character.
Character.
Yep.
And then they throw this bullshit on top of it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just know that if Cindy... So Cindy takes her to the bridge after Tara says, I guess unironically, I swear... she takes it to the bridge, and again, if this show has any stakes or any idea of how to tell a story, Cindy has to be dead the next time they go back to Oceanside.
Right.
There's no fucking way she's not put on trial and condemned.
Nobody died for Daryl's insolence either, so
yeah.
What do you want?
So they get back to the bridge, and Tara's going to run across, and Cindy's going to cover her. And Cindy says the other women know where we're going and they're not far behind, which, yeah, actually, I'm kind of surprised they're not here already.
Mm-hmm.
And Tara asks her, why aren't you like the rest of them? And then Cindy says, why aren't you? And then Tara's like, okay, then fist bump. You just literally 30 seconds ago had a big argument about how you guys are different in the way you view the world and the people in it. And they're almost irreconcilably so.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe it's like, well, to each their own. See ya.
I mean, did Cindy grow as a character? Did Tara win that debate? Like this, these two conversations back to back make no sense.
If she won that debate, wouldn't Cindy kill her?
Yeah, like, yeah. I don't know.
You have to kill people?
They both end up walking through the bridge. Things go wrong. Cindy gets grabbed by a car walker. There's literally like a million more zombies behind some fucking tarp. They jump up on cars for some reason. Tara fights her way through the crowd while Cindy shoots the walkers. And Tara is surprised every single time this happens. Like,
yeah.
3 walkers get shot in the head, and Tara mugs for the camera like, what? Every single time it happens. Directing fail, editing fail. Yeah. Cindy runs out of ammo, which is nice to know characters can do in this show.
Cindy also could teach Michonne a thing or two. She's laying flat on the top of that.
Sure.
She knows how to shoot.
Using her elbows as tripods. Yeah,
yep.
Good job.
Yep.
And we flash back to Heath and Tara. We just saw Heath fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And then he comes back in, fires a single shot, and he's out of ammo. He gets overrun too. The acting and the staging and the direction on this scene are terrible.
Yep.
Terrible. These sand zombies are literally all over Tara.
Mm-hmm.
There's like 4 of them with their arms around her, and she's just essentially shifting back from 1 foot to the other, having a long conversation with Heath, who is in the same exact situation.
Yeah.
Until she eventually falls over backwards off the bridge. Neither one of them get bit, apparently.
Yep.
Yeah, so there's Tara flashbacks. I think this is like in her mind. This is actually happening. And then we see a relatively fresh-looking Heath zombie mixed in with the sand people, which we already talked about how ridiculous that is. Turns out to be a lady zombie. Tara is aware that the 2 women are taking Cindy back, but they don't give a shit about tracking Tara down, who's an existential threat to their community.
Right. Right.
You know,
how long
did Cindy say she died in the zombies? They just took her word for it.
They can't. She already said they know me.
I know.
They'll know if I'm lying.
They actually went over this scenario. Like, yeah. In what scenario did these women not fly across the bridge with armed to the teeth and do Tara in?
This one. The one where the writers don't know how to complete the story effectively. How long until Tara goes back, though? Decides, you know what, I can't leave Cindy back there. She's probably being tortured and maybe
never.
Murdered.
Never. She's
you don't
just
think
gonna,
ever?
She didn't swear to rescue her from the consequence of her own actions. She swore not to tell her the secrets of the Oceanside.
Right, but she could go back herself and try and save Cindy. I think she's going to feel bad about it. Cindy.
We'll see. Okay. I feel like Cindy's going to be somehow the new leader of the community the next time we see her, and they're going to forge an alliance, and all this is going to be bridged under water, and mm-hmm. who cares? Tara finds Heath's glasses and then tracks from a vehicle he probably took, and the hundreds of zombies that were just teaming behind her are suddenly no longer a problem. Mm-hmm. She finds a security card that reads PPP. The best theory that I saw about this, which is nice but it doesn't make any sense, is that this was a nod to Alana Masterson's starring role in the 2011 movie Peach Plum Pear.
Okay.
But
what does it
have
to
do
with The
Heath
Walking Dead?
And her knowing that Heath is okay and a clue to his, like, I'm assuming this is going to be of importance later. But there is no information that I can possibly think of that I could find on the internet or that I could find on Reddit that says that there's any kind of, like, hint of what's to come.
That's fine, I guess.
I guess.
I don't know. It was very confusing.
It's weird because it seemed like that it had significance to her.
Yeah.
Because she picks it up. It's like, maybe this is you. I hope this is you. I mean, another theory I saw is that this is like, you know, because we saw like Daryl and a bunch of the Savior Hazing Committee having like letters on there. And maybe this is a key card for all the peas. But who cares? Like, so did the Saviors take Heath hostage?
Right.
And he's going to, I mean, I guess it would make sense for him to bump into Daryl, but we already have so
many
points.
Why not just write P on the card?
Right.
As opposed to three Ps? What
right.
if they get a fourth P prisoner? What if they lose a P prisoner?
Sure.
Now you got a fucking useless card with three Ps on it, and you only got two Ps in the prison.
Right.
Well, now you're fucked. What is that key even for?
For the PPs. Anyway, maybe that's the PP pants. That's where you hold the people where
yeah, pee pants
that have
province.
Survived the pee pants. Pee pants time. I don't know. Right. Anyway, so Tara scavenges and sleeps in gift shops with bells. So I guess even though she's just barely on the outskirts of Oceanside, that they're not too worried about tracking her down.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of sort of hounded or harassed by zombies, but not really. The soundtrack playing under this is like a cover band warming up and tuning their instruments for a show. Like
this is
getting
like,
the house sound right. You
this
know?
Is like explosions in the sky fell into a pile of their instruments. It's like
they're someone filled a ball pit of their instruments. They fell into it and they're trying to like scrabble up the sides.
No,
and
it's like walkers in a pit of instruments with explosions in the sky trying to scrabble out.
Oh, man. Tara makes a bunch of faces as she eats her pickled fish, and if I were 13, I'd make a hilarious joke about that. She also finds a shell bracelet in her care pack, which makes her smile for some reason.
Yep.
She then bops up to Alexandria wearing a pair of colorful novelty sunglasses and finds Eugene guarding the place, but that's not the worst part. The worst part is she finds out Denise is dead.
Off screen, off camera.
Off camera. Yep. She's playing this all with a very flat effect, and she's got a cool bobblehead doll of Denise, which I didn't know existed.
Of Denise?
I think it's cool. I think it looks like Denise.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, isn't that supposed to be?
It's the most Denise-looking of the bobbleheads that were there. she picked it up and I guess was going to give it to Denise when she got back, right?
Oh, was
like, that's
the
a nice
deal?
Little touch, yeah.
Okay, okay.
I like that. She comes back.
Yeah, Denise
to town,
had the orange crush and
happy
she had
to
the bobblehead.
Yep.
Of okay, nice save there.
But she's not there.
And Rosita says, "We don't have to take this laying down. Did you find any guns or ammo? Do you have any leads?" And Tara says, "I didn't see anything like that."
You know how much effort and
with
time...
a smile on her face. I. Why would she keep the promise? Why would she not tell?
She believes in promises.
Because, well, strongly. I mean, I think the way Tara sees this working out is She tells the group. The group goes to get the guns. The Oceanside people fight back. A lot of people, good people on both sides, are going to die. And for what? Like, I think the stuff that Heath and Cindy were saying is supposed to give us that opinion, but I just, I don't know. Like,
isn't Tara a promise girl? Isn't she, doesn't she, like, pinky swear or some shit to Denise? Like, come, you're going to come back, right, or something?
She takes promises seriously.
I think she takes promises seriously.
Okay.
I think the show has established that, but I can't remember when or
I mean, I take promises seriously, but I work in a universe where the rule of law and social compact is observed, and,
yeah,
you know, your word actually means something in a post-apocalyptic society where, you know, you only get what you can take and all that. I don't know about the value of promises and believing them, but... No. Anyway, we're done with this episode. This was terrible, and I probably got some things wrong. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
Like, if this I got a single understanding thing wrong, I watched this thing 2.5 times, and it's 1.5 more than it deserved.
Yep.
And I'm sure if I miss something important the next time I see Oceanside, there'll be a previously on that's going to explain it all. So, whatever, man.
So, one
you're
more...
You're here for the jokes at this point, or I don't know
pretty
what
much.
You're listening for.
One more quick question for you. It may or may not be quick. So we've talked a lot about, you know, how this show has a tendency to do these one-offs and waste a lot of time, or not even waste a lot of time, but just spend a lot of time before coming back to something that's really important.
Uh-huh.
Denise and Tara, for instance.
Right.
It's been now almost an entire half season.
Probably
a half season at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Since they've even mentioned those two characters. And now when we come back... They gloss over the aftermath of it. They really just quickly... It's like at the end of this episode, they saw what was happening. They're like, oh, my God. Oh, God, it's 55 minutes into this thing, and Tara's now walking back to Alexandria. Quick, somebody call Explosions in the Sky. Mm-hmm. Let's get this thing done.
Throw them into a ball pit of instruments. And
right.
See.
What can she have? Bobblehead. I don't know.
Sure. Sunglasses. That'll work.
Yeah.
Carl had skates. She can have sunglasses.
It's such an afterthought, and it's such a big moment for this character. It's a huge moment for the character, and
yes,
it's glossed over. Now, do you think that is less bad than it would have been to see the tedium of something we already know and the character's reaction to it, or was it better served if we saw all that stuff?
I don't know. And
I'm just asking you. How do you feel about that?
You're right. I would rather have her give her a moment to process the grief of Denise rather than see her like post reaction. You know, I also would like to see people start like, where the hell is Heath? Oh my God, I can't believe you came back and you've got nothing but sunglasses.
Right. You're not right. You've been out 2 weeks scavenging sunglasses.
I was
hoping
you at
least
had 8 cans of fried okra. What's going on?
And not only that, but you lost a member of the group.
Yes.
Like, you not only used more gas and ate more food, but you lost
and
someone.
Lost a vehicle. Which, by the way, why did you lose the vehicle? They got out the vehicle. Did they run out of gas and had to proceed on foot? Because they're talking about getting low on gas.
They were.
And
yeah,
that's the other thing. Is like, what happens if you find a huge cache of stuff, but you're too far away to haul it back and you're out of, like, there's, anyway.
I don't know.
The other thing is, this totally belies what they said last year about wanting to be able to process everyone's grief in the moment. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's such a bunch of bullshit. After now we've had 2 instances where characters should have been given chances to process this, and they could have narratively stitched this in a way to make all this stuff kind of coming back at the same time, and they just didn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything that Gimple and Kirkman and the other guy that does this, Nicotero, is essentially state-run propaganda that just lies and deflects about everything that they either do because they're dumb or because the studio forces them.
Yeah.
And I'm also, like, I don't know, man. I feel like it's almost time to give up hope the show is going to actually turn the corner. Because I don't think these are problems that Gimple just doesn't know how to fix. I'm increasingly thinking either he just is so in a bubble that he's never going to get the things that he needs to tell a really good dramatic story, or the studio is still probably more likely thwarting them with a bunch of stupid budgetary demands. And either way,
I mean, it's clear that something is wrong with this show.
Right.
Something at the core level. It's the whoever is making the decisions on this show creatively is either not allowed to make the right decisions or incapable of making the right decisions, because this happens season after season after season.
Yeah. And at this point, Gimple's had the season the longest anyone's had. Like, he's had, like, this is not a rookie showrunner anymore.
No.
So he's either not getting it or he's not able to get it.
And if it's the directors and the writers, guess what? You can afford the best of the best for this show. Yes. Now go for it.
Yes.
Pay these people enough money to come off of Game of Thrones, come off of these bigger shows that are far better. You have the money, do it.
Well, it's like HBO.
If you want your show to be good.
Guess who directed episode 9 of Westworld?
Who?
Michelle MacLaren.
Okay, yeah.
She has directed episodes of The Walking Dead. You can get her to do your fucking show.
Right.
So why are we doing the junior varsity on the biggest show in television? It's still even falling from its height. It's still getting 14 million people watching it.
That's the other concern here, is that Walking Dead is no longer as big as Walking Dead has ever been.
Right.
And that is a problem that they should be addressing. And the way to address that is to make it a better show. Get the buzz out there that Walking Dead is back. Walking Dead is good
again. Sometimes that can be too late, because I remember...
It can
be,
but they should be seeing that trend and trying to fight it. They're not. They're leaning into it, and I don't understand it.
Back in the pre-Golden Age, I was a huge fan of ER, and there was a point where the show just started getting silly. I think the shark moment was the moment where they had this this curmudgeonly ER guy get his arm chopped off by a helicopter... tail.
Awesome.
And then at the end of the next season, the helicopter crashed and landed on him, I think.
That's awesome. And I remember, in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Doctor show? I'm not so sure about.
I remember thinking, I'm never watching this garbage show again. This show has insulted my intelligence and it's stupid. And I remember, like, a season or two after, they were running these commercials on NBC. It's like, ER is as good as it's ever been, critics are saying. And I'm like, you know what? This motherfucker's never going to know.
You don't believe it.
Because you done jumped the shark. You done crashed the helicopter. Like, it's almost getting to the point where there's a critical... Mm-hmm. They haven't reached it yet, because, again, 14 million people are still watching this. But they're going to get to a point where, like, I think it's time to have the conversation about whether we should continue doing the show, or whether our...
I agree.
You know, even though it's like our third biggest show, I think it's time in the off season to have the discussion about whether we do this, whether we give it another half season and make the
decision. Yeah, I can't guarantee we're coming back next time, honestly. Like, it's episodes like this and the string of episodes before it, frankly. The whole season has been a mess of structure.
Right.
Even the parts that are good have been overshadowed by the parts that are fucked up.
Yep.
And that's been the case for 7 seasons running. And I don't know that I even want to continue to do it.
Right.
It doesn't matter how popular it is. It doesn't matter that we get advertising and all that shit. If we're not enjoying it.
Yeah, because the other thing is I don't think this podcast will be popular if we just rip on the show week in and week out for the exact same things. And the other thing is, I think, and the way I'm grading this is, I think they've had like one really good episode.
Mm-hmm.
Which honestly relied on a lot of sensationalism and shock value, and just a pretty jaw dropping performance by the guy Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Morgan, right?
Yeah.
Who, by the way, that performance is kind of worn thin on me. We talked about it. It's kind of one noted. They're not. Maybe it's too much of a good thing, or and too much of a concentrated dose. But like, most of the stuff since then has been more missed than hit.
Yeah,
and it also, like you said, there are structural problems. It's the way they're structuring the narrative is as much as the narrative itself. So,
right,
I don't know, man. It's
we'll talk about it, and you know, this is a pattern that we fall into as well. I mean, as the show ebbs ebbs and flows, we also do the same. You know,
right?
And every time they have a super stinker of an episode, we go, this might be it.
Well,
and then they reel us back in with the season finale and the season premiere, right? That's been the pattern.
But here's the other thing. The last time I was this down on The Walking Dead was when it was airing contemporary with season 1 of True Detective.
Right.
Because
now it's airing contemporary with Westworld.
Right. Like, some of the when this thing, I go home after I've got done like watching this between my fingers, and then I flip on the TV and I watch Westworld and it blows my mind, or I watch, you know, whatever that single tracking shot episode of True Detective, I'm like, why the fuck am I watching this other show? Right. Like, The Walking Dead is given no favors by going head-to-head against really good dramas. And
at some point,
in retrospect, it seems like it's had a good run of luck at like, all the really blockbuster stuff happens in the spring or the summer, the stuff that's, like, but it's, you know, every once in a while, a True Detective or a Westworld will come and just fucking run it off its corner.
And a Better Call Saul. I mean, frankly, it's up against, like, both of its time slots are up against some better shows. Now, I know Better Call Saul doesn't run on Sundays.
Right.
But which is a it is still grace. A show that we're covering that we could put more effort into without this one. I don't know. There's definitely a conversation to be had. I'm not saying we are or aren't coming back next season or next half season for this show, but we need to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. And I like to see what the fans think because, you know, increasingly I hear things like, we don't even watch The Walking Dead. We just listen to your podcast. Well, shit, we do a lot of podcasts, man.
We do.
That you'd probably enjoy just as much on better shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, frankly, this stuff with the Heath zombie fake out, with the pile of sand, with the all-woman column, like, this shit is just really insulting.
It is. Yeah.
If you know, there's, like, tons of people still willing to defend the show on Reddit and say, oh, you just don't have the patience to develop character. Man, I watched The Fucking Wire. I watched Mad Men. Suck my dick if you're going to come at with me at that. This is just a bad show.
It is.
And you need to watch some of these other bad shows to appreciate that fact.
Yeah.
So,
need to watch some of the good shows to appreciate that fact as well.
Right. Anyway, so. I'm a little fired up about it because, you know.
Me too. I feel like I wasted an hour of my life, more than an hour. I wasted like 4 or 5 hours of my life watching this shit and thinking about it. And this episode has been bad. Now, I'm sure we'll come back to Alexandria and we'll have a couple of okay to great episodes to wrap up this half season.
But
maybe,
you know,
that'll influence,
like,
our decision, but who knows?
I said my fucking worst nightmare was they're going to stretch this, you know, Negan plot a season beyond what it needed to be. And I'll be damned if we're not, like, we should be heading into, like, the real meat of the Negan story. And instead, they've had us on a treadmill for essentially 4 or 5 episodes to pad it out so they could, you know, do the run-up that they should have done this season, next season, so they can tease us with the big, bad, oh, Negan's got, you know, it's just, it's the same shit.
And they talk about the beats they want to hit, right? Like, we've got the plans. We know when we're going to hit these certain points. Well, that always seems to be just a little bit too long.
Yeah, it's a little flabby. You need to hit those beats earlier.
Yeah. So, maybe they'll go to Netflix and they'll trim up that fat.
I mean, I don't know. It's like somehow...
Netflix is not helping.
Somehow, even though they only get out 12 issues of the comic book a year, The Walking Dead gets out 16 hours of television, they're still 63-some episodes ahead of the...
You know how long it takes to read 12 comics?
Nothing.
45 seconds.
Seriously. Yeah. I got like the... Yeah, I got the compendium for up to the two big giant things. I read like 100 issues in a course of a couple days, taking my time. And then I went for the longest time, I was reading the things on digital. Mm-hmm. And it feels like, oh, it would hit my cell phone on Comixology or whatever the hell it was.
Yep.
And I would go, I could read it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like a comic book is essentially the action that happens in between a commercial break.
Right.
So they are really dragging their feet on this stuff.
Yeah, doing an hour and a half of show per comic issue is a little much.
They still haven't beat the season 2 record where they took a single comic issue and they stretched it out to 13 episodes.
Yeah, that's a tough
the reigning champ. But and then they
Let's
took get
Kenneth
the,
on that.
Yeah, they took the 4-8 issue prison governor arc and they stretched it out to 32 episodes. That's a little much, but like, yeah, it's the time dilation is getting worse
indeed.
And this is nothing we haven't said before, which is why it's really depressing to have to skewer this thing, because I don't even know, like, you know, it's not even particularly funny or insightful at this point.
Blah. Right. So I thought I had this whole Enigma android thing surrounding my persona here at the Bald Move Studios, but my girlfriend tells me, like, I'm really easy to shop for.
Really?
Which, I don't know how you feel about that, but it came as a shock to me.
I always find, like, you're easy to easy to come up with the ideas for, but difficult to know if they're really going to please you. Because I could give you a pile of dog shit, and I could give you a gold-plated nest that gave you blowjobs, and I think your reaction would be mostly the same.
Gold-plated nest?
Nest. It's like NES, Nintendo Entertainment
NES.
System.
I thought this was like a Golden Goose sort of scenario.
Yeah, a blowjob-giving nest.
Yeah. No, I don't know. She says I'm super easy to shop for because I tell her exactly what I want. So maybe, maybe I'm hard to please though. Like you get me something I say I want and I'm like, yeah, I could have bought that myself. and maybe a lot of guys are like that, but we have a solution for you this holiday season. Harrys.com. Harrys, as you probably know if you've listened to our show, is a company that manufactures razors and blades, and they do it very inexpensively. It's way cheaper than going to
a
store.
Half the price of a department store.
Absolutely, yeah. And if you've listened to this show, you know that I've been a big fan of Harry's, used them personally for a very long time. And I've actually been really impressed with what they've done. I don't know if it's just for the holiday season as kind of their gift set or if this is something they're doing across the board. But I've been really impressed by the way they're upping their packaging game. Because they sent me another box of their stuff, their holiday kit, their holiday starter kit, and it's actually really nicely packaged. Like I would not feel bad giving this as a gift at all.
Oh no!
And it comes with a few things. They're doing a promotion on it right now, so if you have somebody in your life, probably a guy who would like to shave his face,
but
Harry's is great for that.
Also works on ladies.
No, these razors don't work on ladies, do they?
The finely crafted German-engineered steel blades don't care if it's a face or a leg,
wow,
or a cooch or an ass crack, whatever. Whatever you got to shave, it'll shave it.
Okay, awesome. I didn't know that about them. That's not in the bullet points, the talking points.
It is now.
But you can go to harrys.com and you can use the promo code BALDMOVE and you get $5 off your checkout for pretty much anything there. They have some really low-priced trial sets. This one that I'm going to talk about is only $10 if you use the code, and you get free shipping with it. The free shipping only lasts till December 9th, though, so you got to act now. It comes with a midnight blue chrome razor handle, which is really nice. That's the one they sent me, and it looks top-notch. It comes with three of the aforementioned five-blade cartridges. Comes with the foaming shave gel that smells amazing, according to them, and I concur. Beautifully designed gift box, and it usually goes for $30 on harrys.com. So
does
you
it
get
have,
it
like,
right
a holiday
now.
Holiday spice kind of thing? Has it got some like cinnamon and pine?
No.
The holiday kit doesn't have
like
a like peppermint
the foaming
or...
gel with. That's the next step. They've got the packaging down.
Holiday themed.
Now they're doing peppermint spice.
4th of July, the package just smell like gunpowder. How awesome would that shave with a gunpowder foam?
Oh
my
man.
God.
How much manlier can you smell?
Then the next step is just to actually have gunpowder foam and you just put it on your face, you light it, woof.
You'd be very careful shaving with that. But they got the special offer right now for listeners of our show. If you go to harrys.com, H-A-R-R-Y-S, right now, you can get a limited edition holiday set while supplies last. Don't forget to enter that promo code BALDMOVE to save $5 off at checkout. That's harrys.com, promo code BALDMOVE.
Gift selection matrix looks like this. Does the person you're thinking about buying a gift for have hair on their face?
Yes.
If no, then buy Harry's. They'll like it.
Yeah, that works. It confused me for a second, but yes, definitely.
It's like if they got hair in their face, then you know.
What about their legs?
If they don't have hair in their legs, you can also buy them. Like if they're on a swim team or they're right. they're holding up the gender normative values of not having hair in their legs, then they also will enjoy Harry's. If they remove hair from any part of their bodies, you can't beat Harry's as a method of doing that thing.
Right.
And I've worn a beard for like 7-8 years straight now. Uh-huh. This spring I shaved using a Harry's kit for about 4 to 6 weeks. It was amazing. Like I could feel the breeze on my cheeks. That's how close the shave I got.
That's something you forget about when you have a beard.
You're just insulated from the world.
Right.
You get that. You take that off. You just present your clean
baby face
to the world.
Maybe that's their new slogan. Feel the world.
Feel the world with your face. Harry's.
Harry's.com, promo code BALDMOVE.
Hey, in addition to other sponsor, this episode, as always, is sponsored by BALDMOVE. We could definitely use your support because advertising makes up a relatively small amount of our support. A lot of it is directly supported by the listeners. one of the reasons why we can kind of just tell it like it is, whether The Walking Dead is good or bad, is because as independent podcasters, we're not really beholden to anyone except for our listeners. And the way we're able to do that is if people join the club and support us in various ways. You can go to support.baldmove.com, or you can find out about the club and other ways to support us. And there's a lot of cool things coming down the pike in December. Jim and I are doing the Bald Move Badass Christmas, where we're going to be doing a whole bunch of features revolving around Christmas-themed action movies such as Rocky IV, Die Hard, Jingle All the Way, really isn't that badass, except for it stars the biggest badass of all, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and a fourth mystery movie that we're going to be concluding festivities. We're going to be drinking premium whiskeys from his whiskey advent calendar on camera, and we're going to be doing live recordings and commentary tracks and podcast form only for club members. So if you want to get in on that, if you want to have some Bald Move content over to Christmas, because it's going to start drying up. Westworld and Walking Dead are shutting down, and our weekly content is going to be going into a brief hiatus as well. But we still got the stuff flowing for club members. Go to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can keep us going.
Okay, let's
move
on to feedback.
Do we have any funny or insightful emails?
Not particularly. I mean, some of them are slightly funny. They're like a Tara joke funny.
Okay.
And you know, some of them are insightful as well. I'm being a little harsh on our listeners.
That's what
I'm sorry. I'm in the mood to just bash on things. I wish I had Lucille in my
hands. Don't take
it
out on our listeners, man.
I can't help it.
Don't take it out on our listeners, man.
We're going to do a couple of emails from previous episodes, and then we'll get to the current stuff.
That's because they're better episodes. So
they
should
are,
be,
yeah.
It should be good emails.
Maybe I should have just loaded up the feedback with that. Just not talk about this episode at all.
Yeah.
Bulent from the UK says, "Hey guys, first time writing in. I was compelled to write after the shock of last week's podcast. Although we all have the right to our own opinions, I must say I couldn't believe Aaron called the episode above average. Let me say, this was the worst episode of Walking Dead I've ever seen."
Oh boy, this was last episode,
this was,
right?
Yes, keep in mind this was about the previous episode. Direction and shot composition was awful, acting terrible, Eden and Carl were lifeless and dull to watch, the story structure was a mess, I actually got up and made a cup of tea before the end as I couldn't bear finishing it. We would be making coffee here in the U.S.
See, I mean, I still stand by that it's above average Walking Dead episode.
Well, yeah, that's
and
fair.
Also the fact that they did a multi-threaded plot was like, it just so much better.
And
it
I can't so imagine what Bulent is thinking now.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you thought last episode was bad, this was a fucking train hitting a pile of garbage.
Right. It's two dump trucks, ass to ass, piling up sand, three stories tall.
It is. Ben E. says, "Just wanted to float an idea by you that could potentially explain the use of Morse code by Daryl. For this theory to work, we'll have to make a few assumptions, and that's always the trick, the assumptions. Although I don't think it's anything completely outlandish. Abraham was teaching the group Morse code. I'm an 18-year active duty member of the Navy." No, they didn't teach me Morse code. I also went to the...
Really?
Apparently not, yeah.
Huh. I wonder what you have to be like in signals intelligent? Like, what do you...
Yeah, some kind of comms.
Because there was a big news article last year about them starting to teach, like, stellar navigation again, like for like 30 years the Navy had stopped teaching it, and now they're bringing it, like they're bringing it back, teaching them how to use sextants and stuff, which makes sense
when all
because,
else fails.
I mean, like, if there is some kind of god awful World War III scenario, one of the first things you'd attack would be the GPS system, right? You try to degrade the enemy's ability to wage war. So
sure,
you got all these aircraft carriers and no other way to navigate, you're gonna be fucked.
Yeah,
so I guess why did they move away from teaching Morse code? Because that's another great fallback, great way to communicate ship to ship when all else fails.
Seems like it. He says, he goes on, "I also went to the Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape course."
Sears?
S-E-R-E, yeah, Sears.
No, Sear, I think that's what they call it, right? Sear?
Oh, yeah, Sear, S-E-R-E. In Sears school, we were taught something called tap code, which is a way for POWs to communicate with each other. Since we know Abraham was an Army Ranger, it's not unlikely that he would have also attended Sears school and would know the value of nonverbal communication in this type of situation.
Right.
Be interested in what your thoughts are. Yeah, I mean, whose house was that in? I don't remember where the board was.
I don't
think
either.
It was Abraham's house, but
I thought it was in like the community center.
Okay, like, that would make a lot of sense. Yeah.
It's
possible.
That would make sense. I wish that could have been a plot point.
Yeah.
So we're not just looking at a blackboard and make. I mean, this is just adding mystery. I'm trying to say what's the difference between like a Mr. Robot style mystery and a Westworld style mystery in this. This is intentionally leaving plot points vague so people wonder about stuff like what's going on with that tattoo, what's going on with Daryl blinking, what's doing this, instead of actually weaving mysteries into the, you know, I don't know.
Well, the weird thing is they don't
maybe
even...
I'm just being uncharitable towards the show, but...
They don't point to it. I mean, they don't mention it. It's just in the background.
Like, we have to have people making guesses about what people are doing and, you know, if Abraham...
Like, I look at Westworld and I say... Okay, the maze is a central mystery of that show.
Sure.
Right?
And it's well-developed in almost every episode.
Right. It's something that they're focusing on, and they're making a mystery on point. If this Morse code thing is to be believed, then we would also have to believe that they're not pointing any fingers at it whatsoever. Now, I don't know if they're just trying to establish that, hey, there is a Morse code thing in the community center, and so when we start to introduce this stuff, it'll make a little more sense. But they don't strike me as the type of... crew that rolls that way.
Yeah, also just like think of the reveal, how the reveal is going to work now. It's going to be like Rick is going to be like, you know, I've been looking at Daryl's eyes and I've been thinking about what Abraham was teaching us with that blackboard. And right. I see he's saying, you know, periwinkle blue or what. I mean, like, what? That's going to feel like it comes out of nowhere. I know you have to go online and see all the Uproxx articles about all the signs of pointing to, but like, did they? I don't know. So strange.
Okay, let's get into the current episode. I front-loaded this with a couple of positive ones because I knew we were going to be negative, and the feedback for this episode is largely negative.
Well, that's the thing. Like,
and harsh.
It's the triumvirate. Whenever there's a really bad episode of Walking Dead, I always, number one, I think, okay, what's my opinion of it? Pretty shitty.
Uh-huh.
Okay, what is our forum's opinion of it? Ooh, pretty shitty. Go on Reddit.
Yeah,
the Walking Dead subreddit. Oh, if it's a majority of that is people taking a shit on the show, then it's like, well, yeah, confirmed. This was a historically bad episode.
Yeah, yeah,
and no real controversy this time. Like other ones, again, historically bad because of structural problems. Like, you know, season 3 finale, last year's finale. This is just doesn't really offer anyone that's a fan of The Walking Dead a fun experience.
Yep, I'm with you. We start off with Gemma, who says. Hey there, long-time listener, first-time emailer, wanted to chime in because I really liked this most recent episode, and I suspect others/you guys will be on the other side of the fence.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
First of all, I enjoy Tara a lot as a character, especially her sense of humor, and I thought she/Alana Masterson really shined here.
Okay. Agreement.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see any problems so far. No disagreement. As an audience member who knows more than the character does, I was so sad when we got to hear about Tara's need to get back home to her girlfriend and her callback to what Glenn told her about scavenging, that shot of her walking to Alexandria with the sunglasses and a smile on her face, only to meet a devastated Eugene, was a great contrast. Yeah, I mostly agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I like the show's take on Oceanside, and despite the ending, I think it's obvious that this new community is nicely set up to join the Alexandria Kingdom Hilltop Alliance and bring much-needed firepower.
Isn't that a problem, the fact that it is fairly obvious? Like, I guess Oceanside is a comic thing. I've not read that far.
I haven't either.
But, like, even with zero knowledge of the comics, like, it seems fairly obvious that these things are fitting together like a big puzzle piece.
Oh, okay.
Rick's company doesn't have guns.
Yeah, it
these
does.
People have, but, and, right. But no, they have fighters with no guns. This place has got guns with no fighters, like, which is kind of a retelling of the Alexandria plot, but whatever.
Yeah, and it's not those most basic things about the narrative that I have a problem with. It's everything else. It's literally everything else about execution that I have a problem with. Like, the idea that there would be another community out there that would have dealt with the saviors is not shocking.
Right.
And it's not bad in itself. It's just the way that it's made.
Yeah.
She says, they've done a good job making these groups distinct, and I love that Negan underestimating the strength of women will be a large part of his hopeful downfall. Also, for me, it was totally refreshing to have an episode without the obnoxious saviors. Also, lastly, I'm a fan of yours, but I fear you and others in the fandom might have already decided to hate this episode even before watching it, considering our previous comments bemoaning the possibility of a stupid Terra and Heath arc. So I'm wondering if y'all were ever really going to give it a chance. In general, you guys are sort of caught in the trap of imagining some mythical idea of what this show should do week to week instead of enjoying it for what it is, and even imagining ways it may or may not disappoint you in the future. I think you'd like the show much more if you could let go of these preconceived notions and avoid the self-fulfilling prophecy. Still dig the podcast, though.
I mean, you're right. I don't know how to do those things. And also, I think that it's... It just feels like I want to state a subjective opinion as an objective fact. But it does seem to me that when you end the episode with Carl and Jesus sneaking off to recon the saviors, that is a very interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
And you build up a certain amount of fan enthusiasm that may or may not be flagging from some people's perspective. I mean, obviously, statistically and from fan reactions, it's flagging. And then you go and you swerve and you just tell a Terra-centric episode that is kind of seven. And I get it. They had to shoot around her pregnancy and there's like a lot of things out of their control.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I mean, I understand the truth of what you say, and this is the concern about continuing to do this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, like, I just think some of those things are just objectively bad. Like, the decision to get the story to a certain point of, like, you got the kettle to boil, and then you take it off the stove to throw on a cold pot.
Cold fish. Of
cold pickled herring.
Yeah.
It just seems like from a... It just completely loses narrative steam and momentum. Like this thing,
yeah, I agree.
This thing should be building and building for the penultimate and finale episode,
right?
And it's not.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. And here's the thing. So, yes, there are inevitably going to be parts of shows that I like less than other parts, right? I mean, sure, Terra and Heath, they are ancillary characters that I hardly care about at best.
Mm-hmm.
That was also true of shows like Lost, where I hardly cared about like Jin and Sun until you know what they did? They gave Jin and Sun some fucking outstanding episodes and they made those centerpieces of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that got me on board with them. Yes, I was not looking forward to those when I started watching it, but by the end of those episodes, I was a fan. I was invested.
Sure.
They're not doing that on this show.
Mm-hmm.
I go into those episodes expecting to be disappointed, and guess what? I am disappointed.
But that's the thing, dude. They kind of are. Like, they had something going with Terra and Denise, and then they killed Denise for really no good reason. Like, it becomes clear to me that Denise's death was, you know, it's been a while since we've had a major death. We know we're not going to give him any major deaths, the ones that they're expecting. And also, people are kind of pissed about this Glenn thing, so let's...
Yeah.
Although, that's actually... They can't have made those decisions reactively because all this stuff is in the can by the time it's airing.
Right.
But it's interesting to me that last week, I can't remember the times that they've done this before. I know some shows do it occasionally, but instead of next week on The Walking Dead, it was in the weeks ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're showing all this stuff about Negan and all this stuff with that. Like, they had to know at some level on marketing, like, oh, man, people are not going to be wanting to hear this Terra stuff. Or else, why wouldn't they just be like, on the next, it's just all Terra? And there's people on the forums and message boards saying, oh, this is what they're doing. Just watch, it's going to land like a wet turd. And then it lands like a wet turd. Yeah, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it is kind of prophetic.
Right. I mean... I don't know what to tell you. If you're expecting a bad episode and they deliver a bad episode, of course I'm not going to like it.
Right. But it's not objective. I mean, I don't...
It's all subjective. I mean,
of course. It's all subjective, but...
I think they're doing a lot of things that subjectively uninvest me on this show.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, maybe it does it for some
people.
They're interested in this.
At what point does... flaunting the conventions of narration and cinematography and, you know, all this language of Hollywood become an objective fact that's no longer subjective? Like, you can enjoy Like, mm-hmm. like you can enjoy David Lynch's Dune. That doesn't mean that it's not a narrative failure.
Okay.
Like if you like, there's yeah. really no way to enjoy the movie except as visual spectacle, dropping tabs and watching it unless you've already read the books. You know what I'm saying? It's like okay.
I haven't seen Dune, but
that's well. But I'm I saying as a guy who read Dune in high school and was a big fan and then saw the movie, like I thought it was great. I thought it was a great visionary vision of that thing. But that you know, if you didn't take that baggage in with you, then like objectively. If this was a thing for mass consumption of audiences, it's kind of a failure.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it bore out in its performance. But whatever. I mean, you know, like I read stuff on Reddit because I try to understand other people's points of view. Mm-hmm. And I come when someone says, I enjoyed this episode, I don't know why. I don't know why. Like, I want to ask a bunch of follow-up. Like, yeah. How old are you? What other shows have you watched? What is your... How crazy are you about zombies? Like, what is the... What am I missing here? What is... Why are my expectations... Why are my expectations jacked? Like, you know?
Right. And I guess I'm on board with the idea that at some point it becomes objective. Like, if the story is not told, if there are missing pieces, if you can reasonably look at something and not understand it... Mm-hmm. That's objectively bad.
Yeah.
And I think this episode hits that bar of being objectively bad. There are holes in this that don't make sense.
The stuff they staged with the backflash, whatever you want to call it, Heath and Tara were just really bad. Like
yeah.
Glenn going through the train track, following the zombies, kind of bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can enjoy it despite that, then great. Like I guess I'm happy for you, but I don't know. Like I don't know any kind of expectations would have saved this particular episode for me.
Okay. Jenkins B says, I know in the past you have expressed a slight annoyance with Tara's character and all her affectations, but I have to say, I think it's tasteful writing. Think of it. Tara is like a bloopers reel at the end of a movie. Her quirkiness, fist bumps, and slightly awkward jokes are more realistic than we give her credit for. Every character has them, but it's just not shown on screen. I'm sure even Rick, Michonne, Carl et al. have them, but because we're watching a heightened version of reality, it's not necessary that we see it. However, showing it with characters like Tara, Eugene, and to an extent Abraham, adds a bit of color to the show. Imagine if everyone was displayed as a pale, forlorn character, how boring and depressing it would get. I can identify with these characters because I'm the type of guy to crack an awkward joke, even at a funeral. Yeah, I mean, you do need some comedic relief, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's part of it, certainly. And those characters are there for that. I think Tara brings a good chunk of that.
Right.
Eugene, certainly, like you said.
And if this episode were otherwise enjoyable, I think I would have really engaged with that material. Like, I did still laugh at her trying to go in for fist bump. And,
right.
And Tanya or whatever, Natanya, you know, going for the handshake. That stuff is pretty... funny, unless you got a stick up your ass, but right. It just is groan worthy when it's sitting on top of this shaky foundation.
Yeah. Okay, we are obviously into the negative chunk of feedback here.
Okay,
so I'm gonna try and plow through some of this unless there's a particularly interesting question to talk about.
All right.
Peter says, this was honestly so bad. There was not one redeeming quality about this episode. The only thing that happened is Tara finds out the saviors are worse than she thought. Waste of time and waste of an episode after they showed promise with last week's. The one plot per episode is going to be the demise of this show.
Mm-hmm.
Why should we care to watch any of what happened in this episode? That's a fair question. I didn't. Beverly B. says, given Oceanside's experiences, motivations, and policies, I couldn't understand why they were even considering letting Tara go. I was stunned when they agreed to, and then was actually relieved to realize it was a double cross. It's not that I wanted Tara to die, but they didn't set up the story in a way to make me feel like there was any reason these people would trust her.
But there's the thing, like, that was definitely on the table. They were making a hard pitch to recruit her, and what doomed her is leading with the idea that they wiped out the Savior outpost,
mm-hmm.
which also seems strange. The very first real, genuine thing you're going to tell a person, like, all the different stories they could have told about you know, the cannibal situation in the Terminus, and like the governor situation, and all the other things she's seen that has more nuances and shades of gray. She leads with, oh, we wiped out the satellite building. We preemptively murdered people because we thought they were going to murder us back. Like, I don't know. I thought that I guess maybe that's the kind of dumb thing Tara would do because she's quote unquote not good with people. But
yeah, maybe start, maybe lead with the Terminus thing.
We that's
killed
what I'm
a bunch
saying.
Of cannibals that were trying to
yeah,
eat
like,
us
we trusted,
and actively
I,
did
I,
eat
I,
one
I
of our members.
We trusted these people and we went in and we disarmed and we did all their, and then they herded us into box carts and were trying to kill, eat and kill us.
Yeah.
And then we escaped from that and they hunted us down and like, that's like, you know, who, yeah, I don't, yeah. There's lots of stories you could tell that don't involve current local controversial events, man.
Let's see if Dan from Philly's got one. He says, I swear this show is just fucking with us now. There's always been a place for cheesy sci-fi melodrama. Hell, TV gave us Buck Rogers in the 25th century. But the producers had the good sense not to make an 11 or an hour and 11 minute Twiggy episode.
I just made a sick Twiggy reference 5 seconds before he got around an email.
See, I don't get that. I don't understand.
Should have been born 7 years earlier.
God damn it. Never mind.
The joys of Twiggy and Aaron Gray.
Never mind the fact that, again, we were subjected to running around the same woods we've been running around for the last 7 years, but the episode itself was pointless and had no direction. It literally went nowhere from a character or story development perspective. 6 episodes in, and what has really happened aside from 2 deaths that should have been dealt with last season?
Yep.
Man, I hate this show.
And that's the thing. Like, it's not pointless. The point of this episode was there's people with no fighters that have guns.
Right.
And also Tara's sad because Denise died.
And
those
also,
are the 2 points of the episode.
We need to get Heath out of there for some reason. Like, what are they doing with Heath?
I don't know.
What the fuck could they possibly be doing with Heath?
I hear that Heath has got a big role in the Kong movie and that he's also got a big role in the new 24 series.
They're just making him absent?
That they are, you know, well, I mean,
deliberately absent because he's got other things he wants to do? Fucking kill him then.
Here's the thing about the comic book. The comic book doesn't give a shit that, you know, Glenn, the actor who plays Glenn, will look for greener pastures if they don't give him a juicy scene every episode, every season.
Sure.
The comic book doesn't give a shit. The comic has a focus around Carl and Rick, and the people enter their orbits, and they drop in and drop off as it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think the show increasingly with this large cast, like, you know, has to give people certain things or they're just going to walk, man. They're going to Tasha Yar it, and they can't do that with this... they can't do that with this episode, this kind of stuff that relies on such a large cast of characters. So, like, one of the things you need to adapt it, maybe, is cut down on that list of that group of characters. But then you can't kill anybody. So, I don't know. This is a real bitch to adapt. And it's like, I'm starting to...
It is. Yeah.
I'm starting to start to question and stuff we talked about in the weeks before about actors starting to signal that maybe they've had enough or they want to see an exit plan. It's like, I don't know that this is going to have another couple years legs on it before it just kind of just wimps apart with no satisfying conclusion. Like, there's, I mean, that's this. Do you agree with the statement that there's no way the show tells a final version of the story that's going to at any way reflect anything that's going on in the comics?
I do. They're going to what is that Ryan Murphy show that just isn't there?
American
the one that went off the air, Penny Scream? Dreadful.
Oh yeah, Penny. Oh yeah,
they're going to have that happen to
them. They're going
to
do
where like the ratings have slipped so much and it's so expensive to make that they're just going to get
a finale together in a several episodes and then that's you're going to get what you get. And it's going to be, I mean, brace yourselves because there's no fucking way Andrew Lincoln's doing this 7 seasons from now.
No, especially with slipping ratings. I mean, this is his career.
Yeah.
It's not like he just sticks around and does this and that's all he's ever going to do.
Right.
He's got things that he needs to do and a career that he has to service, right? He can't afford to stay on a dying show for another 7 years.
I don't know, man. Maybe they need to come back and for season 8, think about how we want to end things with Negan and maybe season 8 is like a potential finale.
Oh, there's no way they do
that. You don't
think
they do that?
No.
Yeah, it's too hard to walk away from.
Season 8's already been greenlit.
We've been spoiled by the Golden Age because most of the Golden Age shows have a terminus in mind, an ending point, a landing zone. This show does not. So
true. And it never could.
And that was
the
cardinal
Kirkman
sin
decides.
Of episodic television, right?
Right.
Like it just went out until people stopped watching it.
That's why people didn't like the ending of Lost.
Mm. Sure.
To a large degree.
Or X-Files.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you don't have an ending in mind, then just the demands of television, the way contracts work, just you're not, I mean, the only way you can do that is to have an animated show. The Simpsons can last for 20 seasons.
Sure. Yeah.
There's no contract disputes. Fucking South Park can get to Flintstones, but mm-hmm. these shows can't because fucking people start wanting to get money and they want to do other things, and yeah. who can blame them?
No one. You know, there's a slew of negative feedback. I obviously hated this episode. I feel like I should stop trying to sugarcoat it and tell people, look, if you're dissatisfied with the show, the only proper response is to stop watching it. And as a podcaster, I'm questioning whether I should even cover it, even though it's our arguably second biggest show, potentially third, now that Westworld's in the picture. And, you know, I'm intrinsically drawn to these zombie stories. I like the idea of zombies on the face of it, but...
And when the show is good, it's fun to cover. Like, that's what always been the show's saving grace, is it's fun, because, you know, it was that's the thing. It's like, it was fun to rip on this stuff originally, but, like, I feel like this is starting to get to be a greatest hits, and it's like... Yeah. I can already see the people, like, they're going to be like, you know, Aaron up front says, I'm going to try not to repeat myself. Aaron then continues to repeat himself for an hour and a half.
Right.
Like, that's, shit, man.
But if you don't like it, don't watch it. Please don't watch it. Like, don't do something just because, right? Like, don't continue to watch a show just because that's what you do. Because that's a waste of time. If you're not enjoying it, stop watching it. And I might be right there with you pretty soon.
But on the other hand, there's also, you know, this is the age-old conundrum. Like, do you just give up on something that you loved?
After 7 years of failure, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess that's the thing, is, like, there was always the hope that something would... And I don't know, like...
How long do you stick with something you love if
so what happens if in the off-season they fire Gimple... They bring on a new batch of writers. They say, we've heard the fan complaints. We are going to come back refocused. And, like, does that energize you at all?
Well, you just told me that you noped out on ER, even though they said it was the best it's ever been.
Right. So I mean, because that's a lot of people are, like, the Glenn dumpster fiasco was a jump to shark. The finale was a jump to shark. Like, there's, yeah, you're right. Like,
right. How many chances do you give something before you just dump it?
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. That's a personal question. That's a personal question for everyone to answer.
But I've gone from actively, like, from saying basically turn off your brain because it's not the show you think it is, to saying you should probably quit watching it if you're not having fun, because it's clear that this show is not changing.
Yeah.
This show has been stuck in this pattern for 4 years now, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not going to change. It mm-hmm. is what it is. If you don't like it, you should definitely stop watching it. Nathan E. says, there wasn't really a preview for this week's episode last week. We kind of talked about this. Do you think that was strategic on AMC's part, that they did the look at the final three episodes?
I think they are starting to really metagame the fan reactions around this and mm-hmm. manipulate it and try to get out ahead of it and... You know, it's almost like they got the PR team ready to do damage control because the executives know they're doing things that are going to piss off fans and they have to manage those expectations, which is kind of crazy.
It's insane to me that you notice things like that and you don't even attempt to fix them.
Well, it's cheaper to manage it's probably cheaper to manage the expectations. And the fact is, like,
but you can only manage expectations for something like this up until the episode airs.
Yeah, but here's, it's like, gamers
uh-huh.
fucking hate microtransactions. They hate pay to play or pay to win.
Mm-hmm.
They hate pre-ordering because it's such a bullshit deal, and everyone agrees to that, and mm-hmm. yet those things continue to make obscene amounts of money.
I don't understand because I've never done any of those things on any kind of regular basis at
right.
all.
But that's,
I don't know that I've ever pre-ordered a game. Maybe one.
I mean, I pre-ordered shit if I feel like I know I'm going to like or I'm going to buy anyway, because why not? But, like, if you are on the fence about a franchise, like, I can't believe, like, someone's like, you know, I just don't know about Uncharted. I don't know about Uncharted 4. Oh, they're going to fucking give me a Nathan Drake necklace. Oh, fucking, I'm all in. Like, I don't get that. But what my point is...
I don't do that. I don't do
my point is the fact that, like, like every year we bitch and say, how can the executives be so blind? And every year the executives are probably sitting in their room and they don't give a shit about this show and they don't give a shit about the story.
Right.
And they are saying, well, you know, the audience essentially has remained the same. It hasn't gotten
bigger.
Well,
that's the difference, is now it's falling off. Now you have to react if you value even your business.
But this is the first year that's happened. And, and honestly, it came back, the season premiere came back to the highest ratings it's ever had.
But
and
I'm
those
seeing...
then had, they shrunk by 25, 30,
yeah, I'm seeing numbers
percent.
Like 11 million now. Like we were over 17 million at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. Now it's at 11. I mean,
so they lose
you can't
half their
sustain
audiences.
Another loss like
so,
that.
So maybe now, like I'm saying, it's like it's unrealistic to say that the fucking studio should know. The fucking studio should know when nothing they've done. They've always saved money. They've always, you know, essentially printed money to the show and people still watch it. So the only way to hurt them is with their...
And that's why I'm saying stop watching it if you don't don't like what
they're organizing
doing.
Organizing a boycott, eh?
No. I'm just because obviously I'm still podcasting about it, so it's not like I've personally boycotted it yet.
Right.
But if you don't like the show, I think you should stop watching it.
Okay. Message received.
Okay. Sean M says, thanks as always for all you do and congratulations on reaching your fundraising goal. Why did I leave that in there?
Well, thank you. That's we appreciate. That's the silver lining in the Walking Dead season.
Yeah, I can't believe that snuck through to the feedback section. I have reached my breaking point. Wait, full disclosure, I'm a full universe Walking Dead fan, comics, games, shows, etc. I, however, have reached my breaking point with needing to be taught things by Talking Dead. Not once during the show did any character reference the community as Oceanside. Then, during the intro monologue of The Talking Dead, Chris Hardwick refers to it as Oceanside five times. Five times in 45 seconds. Why do we have to watch an after show to learn in-universe information that the writers should be providing to us?
That's a good point, because unless you actually looked at the sign that was in there for a
not
couple
very
seconds
conspicuous.
Episode, you would have no idea what this Oceanside place is.
Yeah, it is printed on this overhang of the building, mm-hmm. but yeah, nobody ever says Oceanside. Not super obvious.
They call it the ocean, yeah. And also, why would you call something the name? I guess that's probably what people would do. Like, if you set up shop on the George Washington Bridge, would you call yourself Washingtonians? I guess that's the...
Well, yeah. I mean, look at the names of towns and stuff.
Yeah, I know, right?
People do that. Jessica from Illinois says, this is my first time writing in, and I just want to say this. I'm not even going to bother watching this episode. I don't have cable and have to wait for episodes to get posted to AMC's app. Since I can't be patient about anything, I always end up on Tumblr and on the forums to see what happened. Since this episode did what we all hoped and prayed it wouldn't, and we are stuck on one perspective after maybe having gotten away from it last week, I don't even see the point. I don't care about Tara and Heath, and I really wonder if Gimple and company are that out of touch with what viewers want or if they just don't care. Everything I need to know I'll get from the forums and the podcast tomorrow, even though I doubt there is anything in here that will be needed for the plot, especially fist bumps.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know that they don't care. I think it's just that they... And at some point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who doesn't care. Someone doesn't care.
Yeah. Mike says, I know it's been discussed here, or discussed before, but do you think that the show's biggest problem is its popularity? Between spreading out the Walking Dead storyline as thin as possible, shoving Fear the Walking Dead and Talking Dead down our throats every week, and extending episodes for no apparent reason other than more commercial time, it seems pretty apparent that the number one priority is to make money and not tell a good story. And I know the point of this whole thing is to make money, but a lot of shows can make money and tell a good story. Can you think of another TV show that became so popular that it actually became more valuable to invest in the brand over the show? Seems like a problem that movie franchises run into, not television.
I mean,
think of one.
Every television show until the Golden Age did that. They pumped it, and they pumped it, and they pumped it, and they spun it off until people were sick of it, and they canceled it. Like, they never, like, hey this is as I mean, rarely it would a show would go out on top, but
something where, like, the brand is bigger than the show itself. Like, Star Trek seems like a perfect example, right? Mm-hmm. With Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Enterprise was a real shit show mm-hmm. that probably never should have been made. And they made that show to sell more Star Trek stuff, to keep the brand relevant. Because, you know, Enterprise, or because Voyager did so well in that regard.
Yeah, no, it's like there's like this pressure. It's like, well, there's been, you know, since we brought Star Trek back, there's always been a Star Trek. We can't not make a Star Trek.
Right.
People are like, God damn, stop making Star Trek. Yeah, I mean, I think there's other examples of this. Like, I think X-Files is a great example of a show that, I mean, if you're, what's the question, do you think, Jim? Is there other shows that have outlived their usefulness or their dramatic possibilities, or is there another show that's had this much? I mean, because that's
not
thing,
that like, I watch. No,
AMC's got a lot of eggs in this particular basket, and instead of carefully managing it and curating it and treating it like, you know, this limited natural resource that it is, they've just been like fucking, you know, pulling it out of the ground as fast as they possibly can. And
and I mean, think about the typical run of television shows, live action television shows.
Yeah.
Season 7 is when you start to go, this show may have outworn its welcome, or this is definitely the last season.
Right.
I can't think of a lot of shows that go more than seven seasons.
Yeah, good ones anyway. Sure.
Right, and they typically have an end in mind. We are talking about not one, not two, but possibly seven more seasons of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the problem.
No,
is
I
just
mean,
the idea that this is going to be the show that lasts forever for AMC, it's not going to happen when the way you get there is to drag it out.
It seems like the best thing for them to do is to shut this thing down for a couple of years, let people build up enthusiasm, let Kirkman finish the comic book series,
rework it,
and then come back with The Walking Dead Volume 2, recast everybody, and start from scratch. Like, you know, let
at some point they might have
let
to
fondness let absence be generate fondness in the fans,
right?
And I think that, you know, like, I don't know, that maybe
this should have been a 7-season show to begin with. I think they should have just hammered through this plot and been like, let's make a show that's going to be so engaging and so huge that no one will be able to resist.
Sure.
And just done it that way. The typical run of a TV show is only 7 years. Let's fit it all into 7 years and just blow people's minds.
Yeah, that would have been a thing to do.
But instead, they're dragging out the 14, 20 seasons
this show
they're
was
talking
never,
about. It's
this
insane.
Show was never a labor of love by the creators. It was always, you know, someone else's passion project they got fucked over on. And, you know, like, it's a strange, sad story. It'll make a hell of a tell-all book one of these days.
Oh, man.
Like, I would love, like, somebody's going to write a book about, like, the true behind-the-scenes stories of the Walking Dead and go into all the Darabont stuff and all the, like, the
it might
decisions
be Darabont
made
himself.
And, like Gimple. Like he 10 years from now, when his NDAs expire, he tells a, you know, unauthorized oral history of the Walking Dead. I'd buy the shit out of that because I bet there's some real stories to be told.
Yep. One final email. Mark M. sums it all up. This episode felt as out of place as a fist bump with a woman who's just spared your life. I don't mind serialized stories. It can work to great effect, but this one fell well short. That is as properly put as possible.
Yep.
You're too kind to this episode, Mark M. This is a dump truck full of dried up shit on
poured
a rainy
right
day.
Right up your ass crack.
Yeah, this is you being dragged through a dump truck full of dried
by
shit.
By the way, Tara had 5 metric tons of sand wedged up her ass and then proceeded with no shower, no change of pants to run a mini marathon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, her jeans should have been covered in blood. Like, just from the just from the friction
the chafing,
and the abrasion. It's like essentially taping 2 pieces of sandpaper to your thighs and then running. Like, that's just not going to work, man. I don't know. You know, the thing is, we've generated, like, we're 1 hour and 41 minutes, and we're part of the problem. And that's, I guess, we got to do some soul searching about this because I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I mean,
I still
in
like
one way
show,
or another, we are promotion.
And I'm invested in certain aspects of it that are not really being properly served.
Right.
And it's, you know, like, it'd be so much easier just to wait until it's all on Netflix and just gun through it in a weekend, you know?
Oh, right. Do a retroactive review.
Right.
Well, I mean, we have to take, you know, this half season in its entirety and really figure out what we're going to do. So we got to wait a couple weeks before we even start to talk about this stuff. But yeah, I was super, super disappointed with this episode. Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks everybody for joining us. If you want to send some feedback in that I will read, you can do it at walkingdead@baldmove.com. I'll go to the inbox, which is the only place you can get read on the show. If you just want to talk with people on our forums,
if you want to join the mosh pit,
yeah,
of disquiet and ill content, then bop on down to forums.baldmove.com with your novelty sunglasses on.
Yeah,
Eugene will meet you at the gate, give him a fist bump,
and let you ride in and tell you your friends are dead.
Yep.
Congratulations. We'll be back for next week, and hopefully it's not a bummer like this one was, but if it is, we'll tell it like it is. And with that said, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See you next week.